Appreciate very much the opportunity to come and to be with you. Appreciate your presence. I'm grateful that you're here tonight, that we can study together from God's Word. And I always remind those who listen that you are responsible for the things that you believe in. You are responsible for your faith. It is important that you study God's Word and understand that God had something in mind when he revealed these words. And he intends for us to get that. He intends for us to be able to grasp his meaning and then to live it in our lives. And so study and make sure that your faith is based on God's truth. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the family tonight. The idea of being passionate for the family. I would imagine that most of us have experienced passion at different times in our lives, something that we've been passionate about. It may be something very simple, something that maybe doesn't even really mean a whole lot beyond the event itself or the interest that we have. I'll give you an example. There was a time in my life when I became very passionate about golf. Now, if you've never played golf, if you've never gotten that bug, then you cannot possibly understand what I'm talking about. But I can assure you that there was a period of time in my life when if I had an opportunity to go out in the summertime and in the afternoon at 6, 6:30, 7 o'clock and just hit a bucket of balls, just go out there and just hit and hit and hit, I would take advantage of that. And I would do that quite often during the week in the summertime when the opportunity was there. And I was driven to get better. I was driven to be able to break par. And after a lot of work, after a lot of effort, after a lot of passion, I eventually got to that point where I could do that. And I'll tell you that I have no such passion today. I still enjoy going out from time to time with friends, but there's just not that drive. And I would imagine that all of us have had at least some things in our lives where we've had a real drive to be successful. The family is the institution that God gave to us first. It originated with God. In the book of Genesis chapter 2, we read in verse 18 beginning, "And the Lord God said, it is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper comparable to him." And so in the creation, we have God making man by himself and then coming along and making the perfect companion. This is the beginning of the family unit. It is the first institution created by God. We also know that society began with this creation. Because we read in the book of Genesis chapter 1 and verse 28, God blessed them. God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." And so it was God's intention that man be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth. You are here tonight as a part of this congregation because of the family. You are a part, perhaps, of a business because of a family. We have the United States of America. We have government. We have federal government. We have state government. We have local government. All institutions because of family. That's how important family is. It is the foundation piece, the basis for everything else that takes place. We note in the book of Genesis chapter 11, verse 7 through verse 9, that there was a great dispersion that took place. In fact, if you go back to chapter 10, you read there, you read about the sons of Noah, and we are told that the three sons of Noah, they were, of course, the original ancestors of all people. And we even read there in chapter 10 where some of them went. where God sent some of them. But in chapter 11, I think that we have the event that took place that scattered them, that dispersed them. In verse 7, or verse 6, indeed the people are one and they all have one language, and this is what they began to do. Now nothing that they purpose to do will be withheld from them. Come, let us go down, and there confuse their language that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city. Therefore it is called Babel, because the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth. God is the reason why we have different nations, different peoples with different languages. It's why you can travel a little distance and be in an entirely different kind of a culture altogether. God is the one who gave us the family. But what is the family? The family is one man, one woman for life. That was God's intention. In Matthew chapter 19, Jesus, in responding to some of the questions posed by the Jews, they wanted to know about divorce, and so Jesus is responding to that. In verse 4, have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female? Going back to that original event. It said, therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate. And so in this creation of the woman, God brought her to the man. And it was God's intention that from this point forward, that a man would leave his mother and father, he would cleave to his wife, and they would become one flesh. They would become a new family. God designed it that way. One man, one woman for life. And so we also see that there is a parent-child-sibling relationship. In chapter 4 of the book of Genesis, in verse 1, Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, and said, I have acquired a man from the Lord. Then she bore again, this time his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of fruit of the ground of the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering, but he did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. But we see a lot taking place in this story. We note, again, siblings, children. We know that children can be different. They may not have the same interests. Cain was a tiller of the ground. Abel, on the other hand, was not. Abel was a keeper of sheep, of animals. So they had different interests. We know that both worshiped God, and they brought from what they had to worship God. But we also notice in this that God was pleased with one and not the other. And we understand from other Bible teaching that the reason God was pleased with Abel's sacrifice and not Cain's is that Abel offered that sacrifice based on faith. That's what Hebrews chapter 11 tells us. By faith, Abel offered a more acceptable sacrifice. And so we note, again, in this very early family, that some will please God, others will not please God. But we see how the foundation is beginning to form. And I want you to understand something. We need to be passionate about families today because families have always had a tough time. From the very beginning, families had a difficult time. And when you look at society today, we know things have not changed. Families still have difficult times. The family of Adam and Eve, the family of Cain and Abel, the family of Abraham, Sarah, and Hagar, and later Ishmael, the family of Isaac and Rebekah, how they preferred children, one child for him, one child for her, and the problems that that caused. We know Eli and Samuel's sons, and even though they were priests, and even though they should have known better, they did not do what was right. In fact, Eli and Samuel, to a great extent, they were to blame for a lot of that, we read. We read about David, Bathsheba, and Uriah, and in that we have murder being taken place, and we have adultery occurring, and all kinds of things. Families have had a tough time from the very start. And if we're honest, we understand that families are still having a tough time. I believe that most people really do want a great family life. I can't imagine someone saying, you know, I want as lousy of a family life as I can possibly have. That's not sensible, reasonable. We understand that. Regardless of their family background, even if a person comes from a difficult family, a family where maybe there was abuse or maybe a lack of care and compassion, where maybe the parents weren't always interested as they should. I believe even children from those kinds of families, for the most part, would like to have a great family life themselves. Regardless of the social status. It doesn't matter if you're rich, if you're poor. It doesn't matter if you have power, if you're a servant. I think most people want a great family life. Regardless even of religious convictions. If you're a Christian, you certainly want a great family. But even if you're not, if you're an atheist, if you're an agnostic, if you're a member of some denomination, even if you are of the Jewish faith, I believe that most religious people, most people in general, want to have a great family life. The question is, how do we get there? Because again, clearly, families have a difficult time. There's no doubt. You've probably heard the statistics as well. How many end in divorce? How many children live in one-parent families? Families have a difficult time. How do we get to that point where we can have a great family life? That's the question. And you know, this is a multi-million-dollar-a-year business. People trying to help people have great families. Books, lectures, the internet. You can find advice almost anywhere. You can go to counseling and therapy. You can maybe seek advice from a preacher, from a rabbi, from an imam. Any number of places where you can find some kind of advice on how to have a great family. And I'm not suggesting that some of these may in fact have a place. Some of these may in fact serve a good purpose. If you find a good counselor or a therapist who is faith-based, who believes in the Bible, and you're needing help, you're needing guidance, certainly there is some value there. If you pick up a good book written by a Christian, again, stressing Bible principles, you can find good advice there. So I'm not suggesting that these are worthless. But I'm going to tell you something. Too often, we want the answers that are personally pleasing to us. We want to be told and supported the things that we already believe to be right. If we're having problems in a family, we want the other to be to blame, not us. What happens if we try to get to a great family life just by these things, separated from God? I would suggest to you that we are doomed to failure. I would suggest to you that no book, no lecture, no website, no counselor or therapist. I would suggest to you no one outside of God can tell you what to do to have a great family life. God is the one who has the answers. We are often misled. We are often confused. We are often just plain wrong about what we think is going to give us a great family life. Oh, if I could just get that raise, if I could just make a little more money, if I could just have a little more time. And so we look in all of these different directions, thinking that surely this is going to make us happy. Surely this is going to bring me and my wife together. Surely this is going to bring our children together. And so we're often misled, we're often confused, and we're often just plain wrong. How do we get there? That's the question. We need to be passionate about a great family life, but how do we get there? First of all, I would suggest to you that we need to respect God's guidance. That's the very first step. Anything that follows is based on God's guidance. In Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he shall direct your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. I realize this passage is not specifically talking about a marriage or a family, but it's a general passage that teaches us to put our trust in our faith in God, to respect him. Trust in the Lord with all of your heart. He has the answers. Don't depend on yourself, your solutions, your thoughts. Acknowledge God. Let him direct your paths. Do not try to be wise in your own eyes. What we need to do is respect or fear God and depart from evil. I would suggest to you that much of the issues and problems families face stems from evil. I want you to think about that for a moment. Families that are struggling, families that are having difficulties, families that are being torn apart, think about it. Is it not usually due to some kind of evil that's existing? Maybe it's just selfishness. Maybe it's the idea of I'm going to have my way. But you see, that's evil. That's not the Christian way. And so we need to understand God has the answers. And he alone has the answers. If you find a book, if you listen to a lecture, if you read an article, if you go to some therapist, and they tell you something that is contrary to Bible teaching with regard to the family, do not believe it. It is a lie. God's guidance is what will get us to a great family. God has the answers. He's the one that created the family to begin with. Except our appropriate roles in the family. Again, it comes back to God. Because God establishes the appropriate roles. In the book of Colossians chapter 3 and verse 17, Paul said, and whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. So, as we read this, understand that the apostle has just told us that whatever we do in word, in deed, it needs to be done in the name or by the authority of Jesus. Again, talking about where we go for our answers. But now listen. Wives, submit to your own husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter toward them. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. Four relationships here. Four parts. The wife is told to submit to her husbands as is fitting in the Lord. The Apostle Paul, in addressing this very subject in the book of Ephesians, goes into a little bit more detail. In fact, he tells the wives that she needs to submit just as the church submits to Jesus Christ. It is that same kind of relationship. I understand that is not a popular view today. And I realize that if you talk about these kinds of things to the general public and world, they're not going to understand this. They're going to think somehow that that is demeaning to women, to wives. Husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter toward them. You see, if a husband loves his wife, and again, going back to the book of Ephesians chapter 5, because Paul addresses this in more detail, because he talks about the fact that husbands are to love their wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. And what did he do? He sacrificed his life. His interest was in her good. The church's good. That's what Jesus Christ did. And a husband who will love his wife in this way, a husband who will love his wife as he loves himself, will not be a tyrant, will not try to push his will to the exclusion of her thoughts and her will. A good husband, loving husband like this, will want there to be a unified life. That one flesh that Jesus talked about in the book of Matthew chapter 19. That's mentioned all the way back in the book of Genesis chapter 2. And so a husband who loves his wife this way, who's not bitter, who's not vengeful, the perfect relationship. You see, there has to be some kind of hierarchy in any institution or relationship. There has to be someone or some group that has the final authority to make decisions. But whoever that is, they need to make those decisions in the best interest of that group or that institution. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Again, going back to the book of Ephesians, this time chapter 6, the Apostle Paul goes into a little bit more detail on this as well. But the bottom line is, children are subordinate to their parents. And children are to obey their parents, because this pleases God. And then, fathers, do not provoke your children lest they become discouraged. In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, fathers are told to bring their children up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. If all parties involved in the family would simply do what God has instructed, if they would respect God's guidance, the family cannot help but be great. And enjoy. I'm not saying it will never have problems or things to deal with. But when those things arise, these principles take over. Understand what is important. If we're going to have a great family life, we need to understand what is important. In the book of Romans chapter 5, chapter 8, verse 5 beginning, for those who live according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh, but those who live according to the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. So we have two different mindsets here. One sets their minds on the flesh, the others the Spirit. For to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. Because the carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can it be. So then, those who are in the flesh cannot please God. What happens to some families? We get so tied up in this world, in the things of this world, in the things of the flesh, of carnal things, that we just miss the opportunities that we have to have a great family. Dad, let me say this. You cannot have a great family if you're not there for your wife and for your children. It's just not possible. I understand that in God's way, that fathers, that husbands, they are to provide for their families. I understand the society in which we live. Sometimes the women, wives, mothers are also involved in that. But let me say that as fathers, if you're not there for your children, if you're not spending time with them, it's impossible to have a great family life, at least what it could be. You may have a wonderful wife. She'd be a wonderful mother and do all of the things that she needs to do. You're still missing out, and your children are missing out on what you can give them and what only you can give them. And so however busy we become in this life, we need to make sure that there is a block of time set aside for our kids to be able to teach them, instruct them. I don't think it's an accident that in Colossians chapter 3 and in Ephesians chapter 6 that the apostle in both places addresses the responsibility to fathers. And so we need to understand what is important in life. All of us do. If we're going to have a great family. And what's important in life is not necessarily how much you make or what kind of house you live in or what kind of car you drive. What is important in life is far beyond that. Let me say this. You can have all that this world offers in that way, in the material sense, and still have a terrible and miserable family life. In connection with that, when we choose things, we need to choose with eternity in mind. When we make our decisions, if we're going to be passionate about our family, to have a great family life, then we need to choose with eternity in mind. In the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 16, therefore we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing, the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is before a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. This is Paul speaking. The light affliction that he's talking about, I would not probably describe as light. All that he went through. But what is the point here? The point is, he had his focus right. And the choices that he made in life, he made with eternity in mind. Listen, while we do not look at the things which are seen, the earthly things, the physical things, but the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Everything I see in this auditorium right now, just temporary. If I look in the mirror, I realize I'm temporary. This body is temporary. This body is not going to live forever. And so when we make choices with regard to our family, what are we going to do with our family? How are we going to direct our kids? How are we going to teach our kids? We do that with eternity in mind. When your child comes to you as maybe a teenager, he says, Mom, Dad, you know, my friends, they're going to this party tonight. And they've invited me to go, and I'd really like to go. But on a little checking, you find out that maybe it's not a place your son or your daughter needs to go. So are you going to choose with eternity in mind? Are you going to make that decision realizing that it may impact your son or your daughter? Because the next time they may ask, the third, the fourth, the fifth time. We need to choose things with eternity in mind. And also, choose godly lifestyles. Choose godly options. There are godly options out there. In 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 1, since therefore Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking. For whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. And so the point that Peter's making here is Christ endured suffering, pain, and anguish in the flesh. But he had a way of thinking, didn't he? You remember the three prayers in the garden? In all three prayers, he was pleading, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Do you remember that? And we understand why he would make that plea. But in the prayers, he always made it clear, not my will, but thy will be done. And so Jesus suffered in the flesh. He had to endure the same kinds of temptations that we have to endure. But he had a way of thinking. And Peter's saying, you need to arm yourselves with the same way of thinking. And realize as Christians, you're going to suffer in the flesh. Realize as Christians, you're going to cease from sinning. Not that we're perfect, but it's not going to be our lifestyle. Listen to what else he says. So as to live for the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God. For the time that has passed suffices for doing what the Gentiles want to do. Living in sensuality, passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking parties, and lawless idolatry. That's what people of the world do. We need to choose godly lifestyles and options. Just think about how all of this comes to play. What college are you going to go to? Are you going to go to a college where there's no faithful congregation? What job are you going to take? Are you going to go somewhere and there's no faithful congregation? Who are you going to marry? Are you going to marry someone that will help you spiritually? You see, we make choices. We have a lifestyle. If we want a great family, we want to make godly choices. Again, we're not perfect. If we want a great family life, we need to foster trust and love. Hebrews 13, verse 4, let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled, for God will judge the sexually immoral and adulterous. In other words, you be true to the vow that you make. You make a promise, not just to your spouse, but you make a promise to God that you will be faithful. You be true to that. In Proverbs chapter 8, verse 6, hear, for I will speak noble things, and from my lips will come what is right. For my mouth will utter truth. Wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All words of my mouth are righteous. There is nothing twisted or crooked in them. You see, the wise man was talking about how he needed to live, what he needed to say, how he needed to speak and to live. Foster trust and love in the things that you do, in the way that you treat your spouse, in the way that you treat your children, and yes, in the way that you treat your parents. And then finally, if we want to have a great family life, we need to prepare the next generation. What do we learn from the Old Testament? What do we learn from the people of Israel? What do we learn when the divided kingdom occurs? You go back to the book of Deuteronomy, and in the first three chapters there, Moses is talking about the events that had taken place, how the people had sinned against God, how they had been made to wander. He even talks about his own sin and the fact that he was not going to be able to go into the promised land. And then in chapter 4, he begins to make a point. He emphasizes a point that they need to remember. And beyond that, that they needed to teach their children and their children's children. And then time and time again throughout the book of Deuteronomy, Moses makes that point. Teach your children. If you jump forward to the divided kingdom, there was simply no good king in the northern kingdom in Israel. And they were taken rather quickly. They were utterly, completely destroyed. The Assyrian army took them, dispersed them, and they never again became a nation of people. You go and you look at the southern kingdom, the kingdom of Judah. Most of their kings were not much better. Many of them were evil and wicked. But they had enough. Ever so often, a man like Josiah would come along. But you know, he didn't have the best dad. Didn't have the best family life. He made good choices on his own. But how much easier is it when one faithful family teaches their children, and those children grow up, and they marry, and they have a family, and they teach their children, and those children grow up. You know, one of the great concerns that I have is that we're not doing a great job of keeping our children. It saddens me when you look at churches and you find that so many children fall. I understand that they make their choices. I understand that they are responsible when they reach that age. And I also realize that, parents sometimes can do a good job. And yet their children make poor decisions and fall. But we need to do everything we can to prepare the next generation. If we're doing that while they're young, if we're doing that when they're 5 years old, 10 years old, 15 years old, then we're going to have a great family life ourselves, and we're going to help prepare the next great family life. If we're not passionate about this, if we're not motivated to do this, if we're not taking every opportunity, like I said when I began, every opportunity I had to get out there and hit a few golf balls, I took advantage of it. I wanted to get better. If we don't have that kind of a mindset, if we're not passionate about our families, then we're just maybe going to get by. But if you want a great family, be passionate about it. If you're not a Christian, I hope and pray that tonight you'll make your life right with God. I know that we've not talked about things to become a child of God. But if you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, if you've been taught to that extent, and you understand that you need to turn your heart to Him in repentance and confess your faith in Him as the Son of God and then be baptized, we want to give you a chance to do so in just a moment. If as a child of God, you've sinned against Him, maybe you've lost your way, come back to Him. He's ready. He's willing to take you back. He wants you back. Respond if you need to. As together we stand and we sing.